These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome our panel this evening. BJ and Dean. I will read the first paragraph on page 84, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code.
My name's Dean. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dean.
This is one of my favorite paragraphs in the big book. I had a friend in Michigan years ago who, no matter what my problem was, and I had many, and they were very important, he always said the same thing to me, just continue. And here it is in this paragraph, continue, 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 continue. I have actually numbered in the margin of my big book the four things that I'm supposed to do when I find that I am suffering from selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear. And they're very simple, and I can almost remember four things. Ask God to remove them. Talk to someone immediately. Make amends if necessary. Find somebody to help. I think the greatest lesson that I have had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous is that only by action can I begin to think differently. Only by action can I find a higher power. I had a friend in Macon, Georgia years ago who always said he didn't know, he wasn't sure that he had anything to say about finding God in AA, but he learned how to make spaghetti in AA. And he got a zip code in AA. And I guess that's what I love about this paragraph the most, is that it's very practical. It's do this, do this, do this, do this. Love and tolerance, move on. There's too many examples of fear and dishonesty, and I'm thinking of one in particular about a year ago, which was dishonesty, and it had to do with the person in my life with whom I most often practice my character defects, and that's my 46-year-old son. And I had looked him right in the face and lied. And I called my sponsor, and she came over right away, made an emergency house call, and we talked, and she said, I think that what you need to do now is don't do anything. Pray and don't do anything. Well, the next morning at about 7 o'clock, my phone rang, and she said, you know, I've been thinking about that, and I think you need to do a fourth step, all three parts, write it out, call me when you're done. So I did. And I just came from a meeting on the fourth step, which was interesting, because here it is again. Every step that involves any action at all, my horrible realization is they're all inventory steps. Step eight is a sneaky inventory step. They're all. And that's what I need. I think the character defect that plagues me the most is fear, and it's fear of financial insecurity. And I, you know, this works. I have to keep doing it. It's not a permanent fix, but it's a daily thing almost for me with that fear of financial insecurity. I really have to ask God to remove it, find somebody to talk to, make amends if I need to, and find somebody to help. So that's, thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Dean. My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
My sobriety date is April 26, 2015. I have a sponsor, and Simple Actions is my home group. And I asked Dean if she would go first tonight because I've known her for a while, and when Dean talks, I just get kind of quiet on the inside. And that's a sensation I've come to love in sobriety because I never knew what that was before I got to AA, and I feel really good right now, so thanks for opening. I was really excited to talk about step 10 because it's something I've struggled with this year, so good timing. So the first paragraph we read, basically what this paragraph is asking me to do is to be awake at all times, which is an extremely tall order for somebody like me. I'm either thinking about something that somebody at work said yesterday or what I'm going to eat tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I'm never living in the moment on my own accord. I really need some kind of divine intervention to be in the moment. And especially if my conduct is affecting other people. So when I read step 10 on the wall and I was getting ready to go through it with my sponsor, I thought I was freaked out a little bit. I was like, there's no way in the world I'm going to have to set my alarm clock every 30 minutes of the day and then in 30-minute increments go back over my conduct to see where I've been selfish, afraid, dishonest, or self-seeking. Like, that's the only thing that's going to work. I'm definitely going to miss stuff. But as it turns out, it isn't quite that intense. This is where my higher power starts to give me some of that intuition. And it comes in the form of I start to feel pretty icky if I have some kind of inventory, especially if I have amends that I need to make. God lets me know. If it's typically the end of the day, I guess this kind of goes over into step 11, but at the end of the day, I do review my day, and I can tell if I need to get pen to paper, and that's pretty much every day. Something doesn't feel right, you know, and sometimes I can go on for days and days, and it kind of snowballs, and I just feel sick. And sometimes before I'm able to realize my inventory, what that is, I need to talk to another alcoholic, preferably my sponsor. And the beauty of sponsorship is they help you with that cross-examination, because this is where the solitary self-appraisal just doesn't do anything. So it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. And vigorously, I guess I'm not a dictionary person. I didn't look it up, but in my mind, it means you're gonna hit it pretty hard. You're gonna wring its neck. And I have not done everything right in this program, but I'll tell you, the first couple years I was sober, I was an inventory queen, and meaning I would literally call my sponsor every single day and tell her stuff like, I got annoyed in traffic. I was jealous that so-and-so had a sandwich for lunch and I didn't, you know, and stuff like that. And bless her, she listened to me, and she never once said, you know, you don't have to tell me everything. But because I think that she knew, and I know now, that that's better than the alternative. And I'll get more into that when we talk about resting on our laurels. But I can tell you from experience, it's better to kind of go overboard than to not look at all. But I guess there is a learning curve on it, but my suggestion to a newcomer would be, do the inventory every day, even if it feels like you don't need to, especially if it feels like you don't need to. I remember when I asked my sponsor to give me my 2-year chip, and she got up there and said some really nice things, and she was like, and she's really good at inventory. So again, though, I'll share more about that in a few paragraphs. So shortly after, I guess I'll tell a couple of stories to relate to step 10. Shortly after I finished working the 12 steps with a sponsor, I was at work late one night. We had I work with animals, and we had a procedure after hours. And after the procedure was over, my boss pulled me aside and told me where he thought that I had room for improvement in something I had done. He said, you know, I probably would have done this. And I immediately got defensive and was like, well, this, and this, I didn't know, blah, blah, and just started defending myself. I wasn't ugly, but I got pretty intense. And he was just doing his job as my supervisor to tell me his perspective, you know. And I left crying. I don't think he saw me crying, but I was really upset. And that night I called my sponsor and we talked about it. And I realized that I needed to go into him and make amends for that. And I did not want to at all. Gosh, I was not looking forward to that. But nevertheless, you know, I put it on paper. I looked at what had been interfered with, and this is my big thing. I guess you were talking about the financial security is pride for me. I can't stand to look bad. I'm always concerned with what people are thinking, and I definitely can't stand any kind of rejection in any form. And I get pretty self-seeking when I'm cornered like that without any kind of divine intervention and without pausing and praying, and that's what I did. I was reactive. So the next day, I went into his office, asked him if he had a minute, and he said yes, and I sat down, and I said, I just wanted to tell you, I wanted to thank you for being direct with me yesterday after the procedure, and I was wrong in how I reacted, and I just want to encourage you to be direct in the future moving forward. So I wanted to let you know I appreciated that, and he seemed to appreciate it, but that was something I needed to do. And then moving forward, I can say that if at times where he's had to correct me, which has been few and far between, I've seen it as a good thing. It actually changed me and the way I looked at it, which is kind of a baby step into the other areas of my life. But to give you a more current example, I definitely have room for improvement. I have an example from today, so here we go. I guess long story short, hopefully, I had kind of this epiphany on gift giving this Christmas. A lot of times my motives in giving gifts are, oh, well, somebody else gave me a gift. I need to give them a gift. And so we were visiting my husband's family earlier today. And I'm one of those people who I put a lot of thought into my gifts. I try to do it ahead of time. And I like custom gifts and stuff like that. And my husband's a little more laid back. He's kind of a last minute person. And this year I thought, you know, I'm only going to give gifts to people if I feel inspired to give them something. I'm not going to do it just because I think they're going to do it. So as a result, I didn't get anything for my brother or my sister-in-law, who I'm very close with. I consider them friends, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't inspired to get them anything. Well, this morning, my brother-in-law gave me 3 very heartfelt gifts that he'd been getting over the course of a year for me, and I'm starting to get uncomfortable, but I've made my decision, you know, I'm checking my motives, nope, we're good, you know, and I went into it with, they might get you gifts, and you've made your choice, you know, it's okay. So, you know, that was gnawing on me all day, and a little while later, my husband and I are back at home. And I had to say something, and this in itself was self-seeking. I said to him, I felt really bad. Oh, and to back up, my husband did get gifts for them, and he's really sweet. He gave them to them from us. But I said to him, I was like, I felt really bad that I didn't get anything for your brother. And my husband said, yeah, that's why I was putting a lot of thought into giving them gifts. And I immediately got defensive. And just I'm going to try to say it just like I said it to him, because I want you guys to understand how I get. I said, excuse me, the last 3 years I have gotten them custom gifts. This is the first year I haven't. And my husband's quite saintly, but he did not appreciate that. And he said, whoa, where did that come from? And I was like, there we go. Get ready to talk about step 10. And I'm like, just, and pretty immediately I saw that I was wrong. And a couple minutes later, I said, look, I was wrong to talk to you that way. I'm really sorry about that. And he was like, well, thank you. He appreciated it. But now it's time to do the heavy lifting. That was not the amends. That was the direct amends. What I don't get to do is turn around tomorrow and do something similar. And as a matter of fact, this time next year, I'm going to have to look at that again, you know, because I think God puts these in your life, not so that you can make amends and move on, so that you can keep doing it. It's a practice. You have to come to a place where you can quiet the disturbance. And for me, what has worked is pausing and not doing anything. And praying is great too, but just pausing. If you feel like you want to be reactive, something needs to happen. So yeah, that was that. And again, what I need to be really careful about is that I don't do it again, because the amends part, there's so much more to it than just saying you're wrong. Because I said I'm sorry pretty much every day when I was drinking. And then I continued to do it. My conduct didn't change. So now I get to ask God for help with that. I think Dean pretty much covered everything else. Always pretty much everything we finish off with turning our attention to somebody we can help works like a charm. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. We're going to continue on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Dean.
Well, I'm feeling very calm having listened to BJ, so I'm going to let her go first this time.
Oh, are you? Okay. All right. Oh, man. That first sentence is like one heck of a promise. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone. And I love how it says even alcohol. Like, as a result of doing this step, you won't need to argue or butt heads with anybody. Oh, and incidentally, you won't want to drink either. Like, that's secondary. You know, because I came in here to stop drinking, but the root of it was the fact that I was in collision with everything in my life, and that's why I had to drink. So I just like that they phrase it like that, even alcohol. and I have found that to be true. Using the example I just said, I obviously have not ceased fighting anything or anyone, but I have that option. And also, like I said a minute ago, it really is a practice, and it comes down to quieting the disturbance. And I'll be honest, the more thoroughly I do step 10, and I know when I'm doing step 10 when I'm skimping on it, the less inclined I feel to fight anybody. The holidays are something else. I spent a day with my family and a day with my in-laws. And I gotta say, the day with my family, I wanted to fight. I did not. But it's just that fighting is not always being self-seeking. It's that internal turmoil of, you know, oh my God, taking other people's inventory. Jeez, oh my gosh, like, they're negative, you know. I wish they didn't complain all the time. Don't they want to, they need to take different action if they're going to feel a different way, you know. And in my mind, I'm like expecting all these people who do not have a 12-step program to work a 12-step program. And I can tell when I need to buckle down on some inventory, because that stuff just crawls up under my skin and it rules me. But I have had periods of time where I've had the experience of not like having no desire, like when people are complaining or not having a great time, I just go, that's them. God, if you want me to be helpful in this situation, you'll let me know. Otherwise, that's their business. I've been there. It's a great feeling. That's not a place that I get to stay if I don't stay current in this step, though. In some ways, really early sobriety can be easier because you've got that gift of desperation. And I can, like I said, the first couple years in AA, I was doing this, man. And my first couple holidays, believe it or not, were pretty good. Like, I can remember being around family and going, what's this like serene feeling I have? This is new. I'm not even drinking, and I feel I can tolerate this, you know. So it is true, and work's a big one. My spiritual barometer is I can detect what kind of condition I'm in based on how people I work with are affecting me. If I want to know how well I'm working step 10, I can just go to work on any given day and take my blood pressure. and the being placed in a state of neutrality and the hot flame, I have an example of both of those things. So I think the neutrality thing came first because I didn't put myself in a lot of situations early on where I was around alcohol. But these days, I can honestly say if I'm at a party and I have some friends who know that I don't drink, and they go, oh, do you want us to put this away? I can honestly say no. It does not bother me at all, and it doesn't. That's crazy. We're neither fighting it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. That's exactly how it feels to me these days. I can even be at a restaurant or a bar where people are ordering drinks, and I barely even see it, and that's crazy. It took some time. It did not happen right off the bat, but the obsession with alcohol was removed from me around the time I completed this step, and that's crazy. That's awesome. I never thought I would get there, but, you know. As far as the hot flame, I have had at least one experience like this. Last New Year's Eve, I was at a party, and there were all these entrees and desserts, and there was a plate of brownies. And I got a tray of desserts, and I put one of the brownies in my mouth and started to chew it, and I realized it was, like, soaked in liquor. And before I even knew what I was doing, I spit it into my napkin. Before my brain had computed that it was soaked in liquor, it was just like in and out, straight out. It was not me. it was literally like pulling your hand away from a hot stove. And I was like, wow. You know, I didn't do it again, just to see if it would happen again. You know, I was like, maybe we're done with desserts for today. But I thought that was pretty cool, you know, and I really do believe today, if you're putting in the work, that your higher power is going to protect you, like, within reason. You can't be doing silly things. But that was just incredible. I think about that every time I read this paragraph. But I like the hot flame thing, but I think I like even more the idea of being in a place of neutrality when it comes to alcohol. Because, you know, for people who can safely drink, it's a wonderful thing, but that ain't me. That's not us, you know? But it's not even a factor anymore. But what is people and how they affect me. So I get to keep on going with that. Yeah, I think that's all I have on that one.
I think I forgot to do my homework. My sobriety date is March 3rd, 1986, and my home group is Friday Nooners. That first sentence, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, reminds me that of that wonderful line that that the idea that we are or presently may be like other people has to be smashed. And it doesn't say we have to smash the idea that we're like other people about drinking. It just says we have to smash the idea that we are like other people, period. And that's what that first sentence says to me, that my tendency to fight is extends to everything in my life. Alcohol was not even the greatest of those things. I had a friend years ago who was an Episcopal priest and a recovering alcoholic, and he told the story about going to treatment, and he went to his first group meeting, group therapy, whatever, in the treatment center, and he said the first thing that the woman who was leading the group did, she came up to him and she put her hand on his shoulder and she said, "Bob, the war is over." That's what I have to remember that AA promises me. It promises me that the war is over. One of the things that I stopped struggling with when I walked in the doors of AA was the whole, I mean, I am a screaming card-carrying feminist. And so I have friends in AA who wrestle with the masculine language in here. And for some, now that's divine intervention. I just checked those weapons at the door when I came in. That's God. That's God working in my life. I'll tell you what strikes me about this paragraph and about this whole section is we have here is the language. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Sanity will have returned, and it will happen automatically. But that's not... Look at the last sentence in that paragraph. So long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. One of the things that comes to me belatedly is that this really is a pretty conditional program. I think about the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer, and it says, I offer myself to thee, take away my difficulties so that I can help somebody else. Take away my character defects so that I can help somebody else. It's all contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. If I stay spiritually fit, and that means to me, if I do my homework, if I do AA stuff, I will stand a chance of sliding out from under some of my worst character defects. And again, I mean, this language of fighting, you know, I don't think Bill Wilson used many words accidentally. And this is laced with fighting and hot flames and fighting again. And that was me. And I loved that hot flame. I wanted to get as close to that hot flame as I could get without burning my hand off. I loved the drama. I loved the intensity. I'm an addict. I'm always chasing the high. Mm-hmm. And the high can come from something negative, from an argument, from a, you know, getting myself cranked up, just as well as it can come from ecstasy and bliss. I mean, I drank to hear the angels sing, and I heard them. And I heard them. It worked. And when I got to AA and didn't drink anymore, I didn't hear them anymore. And I wanted that big burning bush, angels singing. I got to learn how to make spaghetti in AA. You know, that was my lesson. I did not get to fight. I did not get to struggle. Because I tried it and didn't work. I quit drinking because I just hated my guts and I couldn't stand myself another minute. And I hated my guts with pretty good cause. I was not a likable person. I love the thing about a position of neutrality. I was thinking about some, you know, some examples of being in that position. And I think about a dinner party I went to years ago in Louisville, Kentucky. And somebody was walking around with a tray of champagne flutes. And I could feel myself just with no drama whatsoever, just reaching out and taking one and drinking it. It was just, I was there, but I did not take that glass of champagne. And the next thing I knew, I had turned, I was talking to somebody, and it was over. That little moment had passed. And I was working a very intense program at that point, and I was doing a lot of 10-step work at that point. I remember another occasion in Suwanee, Tennessee, at a dinner party, and it was this big long table, and there were two or three bottles of wine at strategic points all along that table. And I was not working much of an AA program at that point. And it was everything I could do not to have a glass of wine. I did not have a glass of wine, but I was not in a position of neutrality. And it did not happen automatically for me. I had to white knuckle it. And ultimately, I had to get up and leave the room, which caused a big stir. And, you know, these were not recovering alcoholics, so They didn't want to hear about alcoholism. So I read this paragraph, and it's wonderful, wonderful promises about what I can get. You know, it just comes. That's the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as if we had been placed in a position of neutrality so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. There's fine print in my AA contract. The promises are wonderful, but my friend Burns Brady in Louisville, Kentucky, where I got sober, he reads the promises and he always says, you will be amazed before you are halfway through. Not amazed, you must not be halfway through. And I have to keep working at it. I cannot stop working at it. It's hard work. I find AA to be incredibly hard work, but it is not as hard work as drinking and drugging was. And there was no payoff at the end of that. So thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Our last paragraph is on page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
I'm eating.
I got a lot to say about this. First of all, this is a huge caution. The only caution in this whole book that scares me more than this one is we have to be rid of selfishness or it kills us. Mm-hmm. This is pretty scary because I do not want to drink again. I don't know if I'll make it back. So this gets my attention. So the resting on our laurels, I was told to put in the margin. That means I've arrived. and I can get to that point, especially if life is going well. I was talking to a friend recently. When my life is tumultuous and my butt's falling off, typically I don't have to worry so much about drinking. It's when I'm coasting and I feel like I'm in control that I start to rest on my laurels. And I think the reason this caution is paired with step 10 is because this is probably the first one to go. It takes a lot of work, like Dean just said. This is one of those things that is simple, but definitely not easy. Like, this takes so much discipline, and that's something that is just not my default, is to be disciplined. But the last sentence of this paragraph is, last two sentences, these thoughts must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. Finally, something that I'm allowed to do obsessively. You know what I mean? Like, everything else is earned. I just run it into the ground, but this I may run into the ground. I've encountered people in AA who will have you believe that if you are focusing on yourself in any capacity, then you're not doing the right thing. It's all about step 12, and it's all about, you know, if you're thinking about yourself, you're not thinking about somebody else, and that's not going to get you sober. And they're not entirely wrong. You know, over and over again it says we turn our thoughts to somebody we can help. But there are several things in this book, and not just in step 10, that tell me if I don't clean house, then I'm going to block myself off from my higher power, and I'm not going to be any good to anybody. On page 164, which we'll read later tonight, it says, if your own house is in order, then you're good. It says, let's see here. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So in order to be helpful to another alcoholic or really anybody, I need to make sure that I'm not running around being resentful, afraid, dishonest, and selfish. Like, I cannot go to work and gossip all day and then give a newcomer a ride and expect to be okay. You know, I can't go home and argue with my husband and then take a phone call from a sponsee and expect that to undo the argument with my husband. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not careful, I live like that. I really do. And then I wonder why I'm getting uncomfortable. Oh, I'm doing 12-step work, and I'm crazy. What the heck, you know? This is something I have to do. However, it says on the very next page for step 11, we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance, and anything that's a balance is not something I have the power to do. This is just, again, I need to leave this up to my higher power. And so I mentioned earlier that I was the inventory queen. I did it constantly. Actually, within the past year, I've had more than one friends in sobriety who I respect say to me in so many words that I got to be careful about drifting into worry and remorse. Mm-hmm. And I took that to heart. And within the past year, I used that as an excuse to let up on inventory. And that was missing the point, because what I really ended up doing was involving my higher power in my life. So I have learned the hard way that no matter how hard I am working the other steps, that I do need to be awake to my conduct, and not to the point of that I'm thinking about me so much that I'm not thinking about anybody else, because that's what got me here in the first place. But I have to do my prayer and meditation all throughout the day. And my higher power is so gentle, and he doesn't even meet me halfway. A lot of times he wants me to show a little bit of willingness, and then he's like, all right, here's the answer. So really, it's just, like I said in the first paragraph, I need to be intuitive about that icky feeling. When I have it, I need to look. I might need to talk to somebody else and say, let's get to the bottom of this. Has anything disturbed you in the past few days? And this might seem like overkill, but I'll jot things down. If I'm at work, and I'm not going to get out my notebook on my lunch break and do inventory. People are going to be like, what are you doing? But I'll get my phone out and make a little memo, you know, something like that. If you come up with things that work for you. I guess that's pretty much all I have on that. This program is an incredible design for living, and I was so grateful to talk about this step tonight, because you know, it's one thing to sit up here and talk about this, but then it's another thing to go home at night and say, all right, let's do this, you know. And all it starts with is one time going, I've done it like five other days this week, I'm gonna take a night off, you know. And then the next day it's like, well, that was fine, so I'm gonna take another night off. And then 2 months later, you know, you're homicidal and suicidal, and you're like, what is wrong? And stop doing inventory. So, but this, going back to the worry and remorse, this program really isn't about self-flagellation. It's not about constantly being wrong. It's about tapping into a power greater than yourself and helping other people. Yes, that is, it said in the first thing we read, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That is what it's all about. that's why I'm doing all this. But as a result, I get so much peace and serenity. And I got to tell you, this is the first time in 30 years that I've had any bit of that. Like, as a kid, before I ever started drinking, I was just not okay, not at all. But in AA, I've found my first sense of okay. And I just get so much freedom from this program. So thank y'all so much for letting me share tonight.
Thanks, BJ. I'm kind of stunned always when I read that phrase, spiritual program of action. That made no sense to me the first times I read it. Action is like going out and doing stuff. And it just doesn't make sense to me, except of course it does, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, is that the road to God is through action. It's not through sitting around thinking about God. It's, I have to act faith. And I don't think there's any, I had no discipline at all, and I still lack it. But I don't think there's any accident that it's, that the whatever practice we have is called a spiritual discipline. I have to do it every day, and it doesn't matter if I want to do it or I feel connected to my higher power or any of that stuff. I just have to do it. I just have to keep doing it. I don't know if I can say I've rested on my laurels. Well, except for the period of time when I was the queen of AA, but that was a while ago. probably about when you were the queen of inventory. But I have let myself drift because of, you know, depression or whatever my reason, bad marriage is. I have a joke about that. But I've never let go of that cord to Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a period of time when I first moved to Norfolk that I was just in the toilet with depression. But I used that telephone. I never went a day. I don't think I've ever gone a day, not many, since I got sober without talking to another alcoholic. Whether it's a sponsor or somebody I sponsor or a friend or a relative, but somebody in AA, I always have that little connection. I went to a meeting at noon today, and based on daily reflections, and the daily reflections was, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And I thought about that during the time between that noon meeting and now. And I can't approach this program to figure out stuff, because I don't figure out stuff very well. I don't know what God's will for me is. I really don't. I know that if I start my day with something like the St. Francis prayer and really pay attention to what it says, I stand a chance of being a reasonably decent human being. And I do develop that God consciousness. I do often instinctively know what to do. That is, you know, like the thing that physicians, the oath that physicians take, first do no harm. I did a lot of harm to those husbands and other people. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. And there's that idea again, and I come back to that first paragraph and two ideas that are essential to me if I'm going to not take a drink today and be of service. And that is, it is constant. Nothing but continued action on the rest of the steps after three is going to ensure. Just continue. I still hear that man's voice. He is long deceased. But I can, no matter what I said, he just looked at me and he said, Dean, just continue. Just continue. And I have to act my way into right thinking. And that's so alien to my approach to life. I can think my way into anything. I didn't understand act my way into right thinking. The joke that I'm going to tell has nothing to do with this, but I can't resist telling it. A friend of mine in Michigan said that somebody asked her at one point if she had sex on the third date, and she said, I don't know. I always get married on the third date. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
At this time, we're going to pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. That was great. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Jimmy.
Hi, my name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Jim. 101 meets on Sunday, January the 7th. They're having their anniversary. It's a breakfast, lunch, and a speaker meeting. Lunch starts at 10 o'clock. There's eggs, pancakes, sausage, all that good stuff, and everything else. And they got a speaker at 11 o'clock. So, if you care to join, you know, AA 101, Sentara Hospital, by Hampton Boulevard. January 7th.
Thanks, Jim. Any other announcements? David.
Alcoholic David.
David.
Hey, David.
This group, Simple Actions Group, is going to also meet in this room a week from tonight on New Year's Day, and then we have a an event coming up on January 22nd. January 22nd, and that's going to be where we normally meet. Chris R. from Ingram, Texas, is going to come in and tell his harrowing tale of alcoholic misadventure and recovery therefrom. It's a potluck at 6 o'clock. That means bring a dish if you wish. And then we'll have the speaker at 7. January 22nd. All are welcome. Please bring a friend.
Thanks, David. Anyone else? Meredith.
Meredith Alcoholic.
Meredith.
Hey, Meredith.
New Day still open if anyone still needs a meeting. Still got that itch. Be open till 11:30 tonight. So there's food there. And of course, next week on New Year's Eve, it's New Year's Day, they're doing the same thing. Opening up at like 6 a.m. and they won't close until late. We'll just say late. Until next year, right? So if any, that's a New Day in Virginia Beach off of Princess Anne.
Thanks. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is
usually available.
Usually available. Oh, it is available. There's a table in the hallway. If you need a big book or any kind of literature that has to be paid for, just ask one of us. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Smokers, I don't know. All the All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we please thank BJ and Dean again? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, we're not doing any of that. Who would like to read the last two paragraphs? Jimmy.
My name is Jim. I'm Matt Paul.
Hey, Jim.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So to see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact up for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you have, what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
I think we should take our show on the road.
Oh, wait. Naturally.
Okay, our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.